The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Time to wake up!
Get out of bed. Resistance is futile.
Back to reality.
I love that show.
It's very hip to be on the show.
Best show since no other show.
I absolutely love you. You're thoroughly entertaining.
Okay, here we go.
It's showtime.
Gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Is Mark Bland, and I want to welcome you to the best modern liberal political radio show and current events and current affairs show, West Indies of the Mississippi, hailing from the great state of Missouri. The gateway to the West, St. Louis, Missouri, is our home base, and on 1420 WINI, 1280 MKYRO, you are listening to The Q, as well as worldwide at theqnow.com, theqnow.com. We've got a huge show for you for the seventh year in a row. Tony Cabral is out at the Sundance Film Festival, and we are going to check in with him about what's going on. Evidently, even animal reality TV shows are fake, and they even abuse the animals, we will discuss. Ooh. Obama explained that marijuana is no more potent than alcohol, so we should just all smoke up also. We're going to talk about that. This and so much more. This is The Q, Real Radio, Real Honest. But without any stopping, I have gotten a few emails about people this past week that have been great. They have been really awesome in the fact that some of them criticize certain aspects of our show. Some have been just like gloriously heaping praise at us for the job that we've done recently with the show. It's just one of those things, Bobby. And by the way, producer Bobby sitting here as usual. Sorry about that, producer Bobby.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
And how's your week been?
It's been amazing. We have 1 week left till we find out if we're having a boy or girl. My wife and I'm really excited. All I can ask for is a son. I just want one son.
Is it going to be a problem if you have a son and I sneak in at 2 o'clock in the morning to your place of residence, steal all the Green Bay Packers onesies you buy it, and throw them away?
Yes.
That will be an issue.
A very big issue.
All right, fair enough. I won't be doing any of that. I'll do everything in my power to buy the kid as much other stuff from the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, who's the big rival for the Green Bay Packers? Is it the Bears?
Chicago Bears.
I think
Bears or the Vikings.
I think I'm gonna get a game ball from the Bears. That's all I'm gonna do. Just hand it to the kid and be like,
I would light that ball on fire.
Congratulations. That's really awesome. No, but anyway, these emails and stuff that I've gotten have been great, you know, and I've gotten hundreds of them. People saying that they really love the shows that we've done with Dan Walsh and the professional wrestling stuff we talked about.
Good.
As well as some criticisms of the show, basically saying that, you know, Mark, you know, you do a political show and we love what you do, and you're very talented. You do everything all the way around the board. But I kind of listen to the show for some of your political opinions, you know, and this is coming from conservatives as well as liberals.
Right,
so it's
right.
Not like it's just one side going, hey, I just want you to do this. And I, you know, I only find, you know, at certain times I find more problems with the things liberals say. And at times I find things wrong with what the conservatives say. And I would say that I would hedge my bets better that I find more things wrong with the conservative side.
Right.
Because I just think that there's more Sarah Palins, Michelle Bachmans and style people like that.
Correct.
On the conservative side than you have on the liberal side.
That's why you're a moderate liberal.
Right. Yeah. You tend to get a little bit more of the crazies that come in. I mean, let's be honest. A few years ago at the CPAC, a huge section, if you don't know what the CPAC is, it's basically a conservatives convention.
Uh-huh.
It's where a lot of Tea Party type people, real hard edge conservatives go. Michelle Malkin might show up there and be a speaker. Dana Lesh was a speaker a few times. But they actually did an entire section on aliens and the conspiracy of aliens and the theories of how they're influencing our government. So it's like one of those things. Like they would be the ones that would do, the CPAC would be the place where you would find someone who gets a half an hour to talk about Sandy Hook conspiracies. You see what I'm saying?
Oh.
That's kind of your thing.
So I could go there.
You could go there on that. All right. Anyway,
right in there.
So I was kind of like, you know, I'm a little flummoxed because there's not a ton coming out right now that we can chew on and bite into politically hardcore. There's a couple things, like I mentioned, the Obama marijuana thing. We're going to talk about that. There was the Chris Christie thing, the Bridgegate thing that we talked about
right
over the last few weeks. But I really feel that I got a story, and I want Bobby, I want you to start reading the story. We're going to read this entire story. I'm going to stop you at certain points, and I'm going to discuss this because this is outlandish to me. I don't understand where this is coming from, but I want to thank Steve Casper. If you don't know who Steve Casper is, he's been on the show before as a guest. Steve is a reputed conservative, you know, and he kind of put out there a story that, you know, I caught wind of, and I was just like, oh my God, people actually post this stuff and believe the stuff that they're posting. So please go ahead and start this this little story. This comes from WND.com, by the way.
All right. It says, worse than Richard Nixon, an unprecedented abuse of power. The most un-American president in the nation's history. Nat Henthoff does not think much of President Obama. And now the famous journalist says it is time to begin looking into impeachment.
Impeachment, ladies and gentlemen. Impeachment on Barack Obama. Okay, go ahead.
Henthoff sees the biggest problem of Obama.
Oh, wait, real quick. Just as a little preface to the story, when this was originally posted, the main thread was started off the idea of presenting the story and then stating, even liberals now want this man impeached, and called Nat Henthoff one of the most famous and popular, well-known liberals of our time. And unfortunately, no disrespect, Nat Henthoff is a libertarian. He's not a liberal by any means. Maybe they stopped at the Tarian part. They just went to liber, and they're like, see, liberals lie. Yeah, it's liberal. Like,
he's a liberal.
He's a liberal. It's obvious. Like, he's a libertarian.
Libertarian, liberal? It's got to be the same thing.
Go ahead.
Henthoff sees the biggest problem of Obama's penchant to rule by executive order when he can't convince Congress to do things his way. The issue jumped back into headlines last week when, just before his cabinet meeting of 2014, Obama said, I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he doesn't give one damn about the separation of powers, Henthoff said. Never before in our history has a president done these things. And just to make sure everyone knew how extremely serious he regarded the situation, the journalist added, this is the worst state I think our country has ever been in.
Oh my God, stop right there. Let's first off talk about a couple things. This man was voted to become president of the United States, the most powerful position in most people's eyes in the world.
Yeah.
In many people's eyes, he is the most powerful man in the world, or one of the most powerful men of the world.
Correct.
Even if you don't consider him the most powerful man, he's one of them. And it doesn't matter whether he's a liberal or a conservative, a Democrat or a Republican, whoever's in that position is considered by most the most powerful person, or one of the top five most powerful people in the entire world. Okay. Right. Now, with that being stated, this man has the right to use executive order if he wants to. You might not like that fact because you might have not voted for Barack Obama, but if your guy was in there and he decided to do that, you would have his back regardless because he was voted in with the ability to use those powers at his discretion. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say that Obama has been the cleanest president of all the presidents, by no means whatsoever. At the same point, I don't think that he has abused that power at any massive level yet.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Many have regarded Henthoff as the conscience of civil libertarianism and liberalism for decades.
Civil libertarianism and liberalism for decades. Maybe they just forgot that he's not a liberal by any means. If anything, Nat Henthoff is considered in my book more of a moderate. I would think that he's more of a moderate in general with libertarian, you know, stylings to him. So if I had to, like, I'm a moderate liberal. I'm a moderate who tends to lean to the left a little bit. Okay. Not heavy to the left, a little bit. Like Justin, who comes on our show, he's definitely a liberal. He's a left. When our boy Travis Cook comes on the show, he's a Republican. He's a conservative, hardcore. He's a right.
Right.
You know, I'm definitely down the middle. I'm pro-gun, anti-immigration, you know, a few things that are conservative. But also, I have a lot of things like pro-choice that make me liberal. So I kind of swing both ways. Continue on. I'm sorry.
Recognized as one of the foremost authorities on the Bill of Rights and the Supreme Court.
That is true.
Hentoff was a columnist and staff writer for the Village Voice for 51 years from 1957 until 2008. Hentoff left the Voice after he looked into the abortion industry, was shocked by what he found, and had a falling out with his colleagues. The First Amendment expert Still Hughes left on many issues, rallying against former President George W. Bush, former Vice President Dick Cheney, the prison at Guantanamo Bay, and the National Defense Authorization Act. He hasn't liked Obama from the start. Within a few months after he was elected, I wrote a column saying he was going to be the most destructive, dangerous president we have ever had. Hentoff said people had known for years, told him to stop being so negative and to give Obama a chance. Well, we've given him a chance. I understand the case a little. In other words, Hentoff thinks Obama is the most dangerous and destructive president ever. And that's why the veteran journalist thinks it's time to begin looking into impeachment.
Evidently, no disrespect to Mr. Hentoff and everyone out there who's listening to what Bobby's reading and going, he's right. He is the most destructive ever. Guess what? Barack Obama is a human being, just like John F. Kennedy was, just like William McKinley was. And those people, hey, don't forget about the most famous one, Abraham Lincoln. Were shot and killed. They were killed. Literally because at the time period, the people thought that they were so egregiously bad for our country that someone went out of their way to shoot and kill those people. Now, you might sit there and go, well, it's just because No, they had machine guns and rifles and people watching John F. Kennedy's back back in the 1950s and 60s. Okay. They had people watching the president, William McKinley's back. There have been always people watching the backs of the presidents to try to make sure something stupid doesn't happen. Correct. But if they really want you dead bad enough, they'll find a way to kill you.
Yeah.
Listen, for all the conservatives out there that like to rally around pro-gun and I was in the military and I do this and I do that. Listen, hey, understand this very, very, very distinctly. Okay. There are a lot of former military special forces and former military snipers that are against Barack Obama. And some of them are hardcore, super right-leaning, Tea Party-esque individuals. Mm-hmm. These are men that are trained to be 2 miles away from a target, sight them up, and knock them out. If they really wanted to kill Barack Obama, if he was that bad of a president for our country, some of those men, I'm not saying any of them for sure, but I'm saying the ability for someone with that kind of training to pull it off from a mile and a half away where no one knows that he's sitting there scoped out,
right,
easily could happen. Easily could happen. And it hasn't happened because he's not that bad. What it is, ladies and gentlemen, is you just don't like his process. That's it. It's not that you think that he's the devil. You just don't like the fact that he's not your guy and he's not doing things that are trying to benefit specifically the things you want done. Yet, every time a conservative is brought to the table to say what they want done, they don't have an answer.
Right.
They don't have a clue. Well, like, hey, why don't we fix that immigration situation? Yeah, we should fix that immigration situation. Okay, how do we do it? I don't know. That's not my job. That's what the president's supposed to do. Well, that president isn't on your side. Your guy lost. That president was voted in. So he's not going to make decisions by saying, well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. No. Ladies and gentlemen, that's how it is supposed to be. It is a majority rule. It Correct. Is a majority vote.
It's a democracy.
It's a democracy. And your guy's not always going to win. Hey, Bobby, we talked about Green Bay right at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
You love Green Bay. If they could win every single week for the rest of their entire existence as a football team, which we're going to talk about the NFL here in a little while, you'd probably be very happy with that.
Absolutely.
That would be fantastic.
Right.
But I'm sure, and I hope I'm not going out on too far of a stretch here. I'm sure that every once in a while, it's great to see a good game with the Packers where they lose by a point. But it was a really tough game.
Absolutely.
That literally came down to like a play or two.
Absolutely.
Or a kick. And you're unhappy your team lost. But at the same point, you realize your team can't always win.
Some of the best games that sports teams do have are those games where they fall and they lose.
Wide right. How many times did we hear that? Wide right. Was it wide left or wide right? Buffalo Super Bowl.
Oh,
well, was it right, wide left?
Wide right.
It was wide,
wide
right.
Wide right.
Wide right, man. Great game. Great game.
The dolphin, the dolphin. You know, they make fun of it because they put it in that movie.
Oh no, no, no!
But the dolphins kick.
Let's not forget about one of my favorite games I've ever seen in my entire life. In the NFL was literally a Monday night game between the Dolphins and the Jets, where the Dolphins were down by like 35 points and they ended up coming back, and the score ended up being like 57 to 55 or something. It was like astronomical.
Right.
It was an amazing Monday night football game to watch. You know what I'm saying? Guys, your team can't always win. And sometimes they're going to get beat at the last second.
Look at the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, people are still up in a roar, you know, because we lost. We had the opportunity. We went to six games, seven games.
Go ahead and finish what you were reading there, sir.
All right. He has no right to do these executive orders, Hentoff insisted, his voice reaching a crescendo of indignation. I'm sorry.
Yes.
He says Obama gets away with it only because there is no outrage in Congress, no coverage by the media, and no knowledge by the public.
Aha. Because no one's talking about it, including Mark Bland and the Q and Bobby. Right. Yeah, like we don't talk about any of these things.
He's in a position now where he figures he's going to do whatever he wants to do. In fact, Hentoff said, Obama doesn't even pretend to care about the separation of powers between the executive branch and Congress anymore.
Of course he doesn't. For 4 years, you guys went out of your way and told him that you were doing everything in your power to roadblock him on everything that he attempted to do. So once he finally re-won election and turned around knowing that it was his last term, he told you guys, I don't care about you anymore. I gave you a chance to work with me. You went out of your way to be a-holes to me. So now I'm moving on.
Right. And it says exactly that he's the boss and hardly anybody cares enough to stop him. The most well-known examples of Obama changing or issuing laws with the stroke of a pen by issuing executive orders include delaying the employer mandate in Obamacare, changing the types of plans available under Obamacare, ensuring abortions would be covered under Obamacare, enacting key provisions of the failed DREAM Act to halt deportations of illegal immigrants, enacting stricter gun control measures, sealing presidential records, creating an economic council, creating a domestic policy council, changing of pay grades.
Okay, now, did you notice the first few that you rattled off there were literally
Obamacare?
Well, yeah, but they were Obamacare, and they were things that literally he went out of his way to change at the last second because so many conservatives and the people against Obamacare rallied so hard against these things because it was, oh, look at the destruction it's created. The website doesn't work, and the people are completely confused, and this, that, and the other. We just wish you would do something. He does it, and now you complain about how he did it. Now you complain about how you don't like that he did it at all.
Even the far left leaning fact check wrote, it's true that President Obama is increasingly using his executive powers in the face of staunch Republicans' opposition in Congress. He's changing federal policies on immigration and welfare and appointed officials without congressional approval. I would say that never before in our history had a president done these things. He noted that while Nixon merely claimed that winning an election gave him the right to do whatever he wanted, Obama is actually doing whatever he pleases. The journalist said he doesn't think any other president has acted so lawlessly as a matter of habit. So if this is if there isn't a reason for at least the start of an impending investigation that would lead to impeachment, what is?
Maybe, ladies and gentlemen, there are other presidents that were as bad or worse. They just weren't as transparent. Oh, maybe that whole Obama administration is going to be transparent is actually happening. It's just not as transparent as you want it to be. You see, he gives you 80% transparency, which is 80% more than any other president has ever given you. And you still cry about the 20 that's not transparent that he's protecting you against. Have you ever thought about that? You know, some people just have what I consider lofty goals and unreasonable expectations, Bobby.
I agree. Hentoff is baffled that Obama should escape such scrutiny when former President Bill Clinton faced impeachment for being a lousy liar, quote unquote. A big part of the problem, the journalist believes, is what he calls the utter ignorance of a huge portion of the population, which is not outraged at losing its basic right to be self-governing.
All right. Just kill it there. Just kill it there. There's no reason to like beat this one down because I think there's only one more paragraph and it's just a bunch of blah, blah, blah. Okay. So here's the deal. Barack Obama, first off, has never been in front of Congress or put on the stand at all and swore on a Bible to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Bill Clinton was. He was literally deposed in regards to the situation with Monica Lewinsky. And when he was there, he said, what's the definition of is, you know, or what's, you know, he said all kinds of things, including that, you know, I never had sexual relations with that woman. Okay. That was a lie. And it was while you were being deposed. I'm sorry, Barack Obama's never been on the stand. He's not been deposed about anything. There's nothing for him to lie on behalf of. He hasn't swore on a Bible, which is the legal way that they start off all depositions.
Correct.
And he hasn't broken any rules or lied while under deposition whatsoever. Yes, when the president of the United States goes under deposition and then lies to the people, information comes out, the chances that you have a case for impeachment are there.
And the biggest thing, too, is he said, when did he originally get elected? 2008.
Yes.
He said in the 2008 election, it was all over every damn poster you saw, everything. Change.
Yeah. It's going to change, guys.
We elected him. We, the people, elected him as our president.
Thank you, Zeb.
Based upon change.
Now, here's the problem. You people out there who are conservative, you don't like change. That's what it really comes down to.
Exactly.
You don't want things to be different. You don't want this country to run at all. In fact, you call liberals and people who tend to be liberal thinking progressive as if it's a bad and a negative term. Hey, Bobby.
Yeah.
You would say that Brett Favre was probably one of the best quarterbacks
of all time.
Couple decades.
Yep. Okay? Absolutely.
I mean, of all time, that's a tough call, but he's there. He's up there. Okay. Now, let's assume that it's his rookie season.
Right.
Okay. And he didn't progress in his skill set the way he needed to.
Correct.
Or Aaron Rodgers didn't progress in their skill set. As a Green Bay Packers fan, would you be happy about that?
No.
No, you wouldn't. Why wouldn't you be? Because you want to see what?
Progress.
You want to see progress. You want to see the person getting better and making better decisions.
Correct.
And becoming better at what they do.
Eventually getting
no company ever starts, funds all their capital, invests their time and energies to create their company to turn around and just be happy with the fact that they only made $50 every day for like 15 years.
Right.
Like you make $15 one day, you want to make 20 the next and 25 the next after that and 30 and then 40 and then 100 and then 200, and you want to become a successful business. If Bill Gates didn't progress in his ability to code Windows the way it was coded, we wouldn't have gotten Windows 95 and then 98 and then ME and then XP and Vista and all that. Like, if there wasn't progress, guys, you'd still be on Windows 95. And let me tell you something right now. Yeah, that's great and all, but Windows 95 compared to even Vista or XP was nowhere near on the same level.
If you want to watch a great movie that talks about this, watch the movie Jobs with Ashton Kutcher. A lot of people bashed it, but that's exactly what Steve Jobs was about. Steve Jobs was all about always progressing and becoming better.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to take a break here on The Q. Check out theqnow.com. When we get back, we're going to have one Mr. Anthony Cabral. Tony Cabral at the Sundance Film Festival for the seventh year in a row on our show.
Yeah.
He's going to be calling in so he can talk to us about what's going on at the Sundance Film Festival. We'll be back right after this.
So would you describe yourself as satisfied, extremely satisfied, or totally satisfied?
No sleep till!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Q, of course. My name is Mark Bland, joined today by producer Bobby, as always. We just got done ranting on conservatives and stupidity and stuff like that. So awesome there. As we promised at the bottom of the hour, it is time for us to make our yearly jaunt out to the wonderful city of Park City, Utah, for one Mr. Anthony Tony Cabral. What's going on, Tony Cabral?
Tony! Hello, boys. How are you back in St. Louis?
We are doing absolutely fine. How is the weather in Park City this year?
Actually, it's been fairly moderate. You know, I mean, it's
you sound a little under the weather. You sound a little under the weather.
It's a lack of voice from being so energetic this year. You know, it's been a busy year so far out here in Park City.
Tony, you run one of the theaters out there, correct?
The biggest of the bestest, the most visual.
I am the manager for the Egyptian, which is the original Sundance venue on Main Street in Park City. Not the biggest theater, but it is the original.
It's the most popular one. Let's be honest. It's the most iconic. It's the one that they associate with every picture of every review every year.
Yes. Very iconic.
Now, have you been able to finagle, wheel, and deal yourself into, I ask you this every year, wheel yourself and deal yourself into a major movie distribution deal yet?
Myself, no. But then again, this is the year that promises to happen. Just not here at Sundance right now.
Ah, I see. So you have a movie that you can get sold?
Well, I have a few things on the table to get produced this year. You know, a couple shorts and a couple features. And, you know, as it progresses, I'm sure there'll be lots of news unfolding, which most likely we might be able to break a few things on the queue as the months unfold.
All right. Now, make sure you get close to your Wi-Fi and all that, because you're Skyping in today. And unfortunately, it's cutting out here and there. OK, you got to step outside and make sure you get that Apple iPhone up as close to the sky as you can.
Out there in Park City, Utah, you know, not sure how much Wi-Fi there actually is.
Stop it. Don't be mean to
him. Well, we have plenty of Wi-Fi, but there's a lot of iPhones in use because there's a lot of wheeling and dealing going on.
There is a lot of wheeling and dealing. Yeah. So this year, 2014, marks what year for you in a row?
15.
This is your 15th year. 15th anniversary. Congratulations. That's big.
That's awesome.
Thank you very much. I have officially worked half of Sundance. Sundance is 30 years old, and I have worked 15 of them.
That's amazing.
As the Midnight Manager for many of those years, so you're kind of in a power position a little bit.
I think we figured out that I have the longest tenure at one theater on one shift of anybody in all of Sundance.
Wow. So look at you making a name for yourself. So did Bob come down and give you a cake?
No, Bob did not give me a cake.
So what are some of the big movies that that you have premiered at Sundance over the years?
Over the years, Super Troopers, Saw, Dead Snow, which the sequel actually screens this week.
Super Troopers. That is
Dead Snow. What is Dead Snow?
Dead Snow is the Nazi zombie film. European film. And yeah, so we premiered Dead Snow several years ago, and tonight this week was the premiere of Dead Snow Red versus Dead, which is the sequel to that movie.
And
Nazi zombies and lots of
Santa Claus. Lots of Santa Claus. That's what the red is. Red versus Dead. I get it.
Now a big thing is this year they've been doing, they usually do like an anniversary kind of special every year. This year was the big 20th anniversary of the class of 1994, which one very well-known filmmaker was part of the class of 1994, and that was Kevin Smith.
Oh, I was going to say Quentin Tarantino.
No, they were earlier. They were earlier than that. And 94 was the premiere of Clerks, which actually which they are screening a special midnight screening later this week with Kevin Smith in the house to do the Q&A, which I'm very excited to be part of.
I gotcha. So let's get into it a little bit. 2014 sure. Sundance Film Festival. Tony Cabral chiming in from Park City, Utah. As he usually does on the queue every single year. We started this with Primetime with Mark and Tony.
Yeah.
And then from there, naturally just progressed into the queue. And from there, you know, it's been a really fun ride. And I think this is number seven, year seven for us, actually, Tony.
Yeah, it's a great tradition we have here.
And so what is, let's just knock it out the park right off the top, bro. What is the big film everyone is talking about? Like a few years ago, it was Tadpole. I think last year, what was it?
Didn't Garden State premiere at Sundance?
Garden State did premiere at Sundance, yes.
Yeah, well, every year there's a huge movie. There's a huge movie that everyone is buzzing and talking about. What's the big one this year?
Well, one of the bigger films that's been talked about prior to the festival is the movie Life Itself from director Steve James. Steve James, of course, made the movie Hoop Dreams many years ago, and they did actually have a special screening of Hoop Dreams again. But this year they premiered his new film, Life Itself, which is the documentary based on the memoirs of the late, great Roger Ebert.
Ah,
I see.
And it's a very emotional film. In fact, Roger's widow, Chaz, was in the house for the Q&A, as well as Gene Siskel's widow, who appears in the film. And it's a very, very powerful, powerful film.
That was Ben Affleck driving by as fast as he could to get over to Matt Damon's house.
He's trying to hurry up and get stuff done for Batman.
He's got to get
stuff. I'm Batman.
He's Batman. He's definitely Batman.
Another big film, which I'm sure Mark Bland would have been completely interested in seeing. If Mark would have been here, Mark would have been the first one in line to see the movie. It was the movie Mitt.
Ah, the Mitt Romney story. I saw the trailer. They premiered the trailer on Netflix. And the film will
actually be premiering on Netflix later this week. It actually premieres before the end of the festival.
Oh, really? Oh, so I get to a chance to see it.
The film was actually bought by Netflix and will be premiering later this week on Netflix.
Perfect.
And so I actually did get to see the film. Mitt Romney was in the house for the premiere. And it's actually a really good film. And in fact, as much as I know Mark would love to rip Mitt Romney limb from limb for different things politically, the film is actually more about him as a family man and what his family dealt with while he ran for presidency. And it starts in 2006, and then it goes all the way through till his loss to Barack Obama.
Interesting. That's very interesting. You know, one of my friends, who's also a well-known filmmaker, happens to be out at Sundance this week. He's a director by the name of Billy Corbin. Billy's well-known for doing the ESPN 30 for 30, The U, about the University of Miami. He's also the one who did Cocaine Cowboys 1 and 2, as well as he's got a movie called Dogfight getting ready to come out. He's involved in a few things, and I think he's debuting a film there also, but I can't remember exactly which film it is. Dogfight I really want to see, because Dogfight's the story of the Kimbo Slice things in life. The underground street fighting that took over Miami for a few years there, where Kimbo Slice came from it, and it's like the background to all of that.
Now, Tony, what films have you been able to, of yours, have showed up at Sundance?
I don't think any.
I have not had a film in Sundance yet. However, the goal is, part of 2014, is to change that historically and hopefully come back next year with a short film that I am producing and directing.
There is a short film that he is producing and directing called Doug. That is in, what do we call that? Pre-production right now.
Doug is in development.
It's in pre-production right now. And I think that it's going to win himself a couple Oscars, maybe even a little Palme d'Or. That's what I'm thinking. So Tony, you, every year you get to get out there and you get to walk around and hobnob and do your thing. And, obviously you get to catch some movies. So you caught Mitt. What else did you catch beyond Mitt?
I did see Life Itself, like I said. They had a special screening of the movie Bottle Rocket from Wes Anderson, because they actually didn't screen it originally when it first was produced. And they kind of did a thing for Wes to like go back to a film that they didn't screen originally that they wanted to make up for. And Luke Wilson was in the house to introduce Bottle Rocket. As well as there was two films this year that are feature film versions of the short films that screened last year and won awards. One of those films is Whiplash. And one of those films is Fishing Without Nets. Fishing Without Nets, which of course is the
story of Somalia over in Africa or whatever, of the town that lost the water supply or something.
Yeah, Fishing Without Nets from Cutter Hottering is a story about Somali pirates and looks in like almost documentary style, looking into Somali pirates. And in fact, it's completely fictional, but the short film was so powerful and impressive that they were able to get financing for the feature. The other film from director Damon Chazelle was the movie Whiplash. Not the one with Ellen Page, no.
Okay, Juno is not involved in this one.
All right. Not sure. Whiplash, which stars Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons. We all know J.K. from all of his insurance company ads.
Okay. Oh, is he Mayhem?
It is. There's a lot of mayhem in the movie, yes.
No, is he Mr. Mayhem? Is that who you're talking about?
No. J.K. Simmons is the one who teaches the University of Insurance for all the things to learn.
He's the farmer's guy.
Okay, got it. Farmer's insurance.
Farmer's insurance. Well, the film Whiplash is actually about a drummer trying to, you know, be in the core jazz band at a very well-known music school, and the struggle he goes through to be the best drummer he can be. And when the director did the short last year to raise awareness, raise money, and then got the privilege of making the film, executive produced by Jason Reitman, it's kind of amazing. Wow. Like, I mean, mean, it was, it's one that a lot of people are talking about. It's in dramatic competition along with Fishing Without Nets. So it's going to be interesting to see what films actually pull out awards
this
year.
I saw this with Little Bow Wow. It was called Drumline. And it was amazing. You know, Bow Wow was standing up there drumming on the drums real hardcore. But they had like a Master P soundtrack and No Limit soldiers dancing behind him and stuff.
Not the same movie, I guarantee it.
Okay.
Not the same movie.
All right. I just thought it was about drums and stuff like that. You also like to get out and about and go to some of the other little the classes that they teach, as well as some of the seminars that they put on.
Oh, really?
What's going on over at the Music Cafe, as well as all that stuff this year?
Well, in fact, I actually this year haven't done too much continuing education of going to panels. I've actually gotten to see a few more movies. But I did hear Richie Sambora did an amazing set at the Music Cafe just a few nights back.
Oh, there you go. I would have loved to have seen that.
Oh, yeah.
He's not with Heather anymore, is he? He
definitely went to town on his, double guitar, so.
Interesting. So what's your week been like other than that? Like, how has Tony personally been doing this week? Has the weather been great? Have you gone out and gotten to meet a lot of people and hobnob a little bit? Or has it really just been kind of focused on work and movies?
It actually has been focused a little bit more on work and movies, and there has been a little bit of aspects of networking. There's been some great chances to interact with, you know, some power players, and the week is still not, you know, the festival's still not done yet. There's still a little bit of time left for some more meetings to take place, and we'll see how things eventually pan out. There was another big surprise this year at the festival. For the first time, they did what some other festivals have done, where they, in a sense, reveal a film X, an unknown named movie that they reveal at the moment it's introduced. The same thing happened back at Telluride last year when they unveiled
12
Years a Slave.
My God, this guy works in the movie industry. He doesn't even know the movies that are for Academy Award. I got it.
I've been doing a lot. I'm sorry. It's been a long week.
Hey, listen.
So 12 Years a Slave was the Film X at Telluride back in September. Well, last night, our Film X that we premiered was Volume 1 of Nymphomaniac by Lars von Trier. And it's, the whole film actually has been kind of running in its 5-hour entirety over in Europe. And they're slowly bringing the 2-volume version in smaller 2-hour increments to the States. And it was quite amazing. It's a very powerful film, very much adult oriented, but still not as graphic as it might sound.
Now, one of the things I hit you up about when you were getting ready to get on the plane to go out to Sundance, I was talking to you about a few movies, and I'm really impressed. And I found out that it sold to Focus Features for $2.75 million. But I was really impressed because last year, if you don't know, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Cabral came onto the queue multiple times to promote his Kickstarter campaign for a movie, a small short feature that he was trying to do, a short. And unfortunately, regardless of that, that was his attempt to use Kickstarter to make a movie. Now, this isn't unheard of, but evidently Zach Braff, the actor, is really well known and was able to pull off getting the monies together through Kickstarter to create a movie, a full-length feature film that actually made it into Sundance called Wish I Was Here. What's the word going around Sundance about that and the whole Kickstarter aspect of that, Tony?
Well, I haven't heard too much about Zach's movie other than a few people have said, mixed reviews here and there. But Kickstarter has been a huge proponent of countless movies. And in fact, I had a discussion with one of the senior programmers here just a few days ago, specifically about that, about the fact that how amazing Kickstarter has been. It's kind of like our smartphones today. We wonder how we lived without them before. And now Kickstarter is that element that we kind of wonder how filmmakers made movies before. And so it's a huge resource. I mean, crowdfunding in general is this amazing tool.
I think it's beginning to bring back the indie style of cinema. And the reason is because whereas you have a lot of great storylines and a lot of spec scripts that just get passed on completely because it's going to cost $1.5 million. We don't want to take a chance because you and me have had this conversation off the air many a time just hanging out. Mm-hmm. These old guard guys just don't want to take chances on movies anymore, no matter how cool the script sounds or this, that, or the other. So it'll just sit there in developmental or in just spec forever and never get made. And now you can just take that completely out of their hands and go, you know what? I know enough people that might really want to see something like this. Here it is. Maybe it'll get made.
Oh, exactly. And I remember years ago when I went to a panel and listened to Yancey, one of the founders of Kickstarter, talk about how Kickstarter originally was like a development tool to see if an audience was actually there for your artistic venture. And then, of course, nowadays it's a tool for filmmakers to use to build an audience in advance, have the audience back the project and help fund the movie, and then in turn take it to the next level.
Do you think that it's going to get corrupt? Do you think you're ever going to get to a point where, like, okay, let me give you an example, a hypothetical, and this might be the first time this is ever really talked about in the media ever. So we might be doing an exclusive that 5 years from now we're going to look back on and go, wow, we kind of broke that at Sundance 2014 with Tony on the phone.
Okay, what's that?
The idea that, you know, you got the new Star Wars movies coming up. Okay.
Sure.
And
sure.
So they do the first two out of the three, and then they realize that, you know what, they don't really want to put their money up, and they have so many fans of Star Wars that they basically force their hand and put them in a position and say, hey, listen, we were going to do three, but we only funded for two. If you want to see the third one, which we got the script right here and it's amazing, it's going to end this all off really great, but you're going to have to buck up for it. You're going to have to fund our project if you want to see the third movie. That's almost like a corrupt way of throwing that people under the bus a little bit, you know?
But at the same time, though, like you just said a moment ago, it brings back the true nature of independent cinema. And not for a lot of filmmakers who might be growing or have a small audience and want a broader audience, allows them to go. Something like Star Wars isn't going to use it because obviously the machine behind it is so much more powerful already. However, somebody, you know, like myself or like Zach Braff trying to, you know, embrace that, you know, independent, you know, spirit to get the audience behind it, to get enthusiastic and then support the project and actually see it to fruition. That's the true independent spirit.
Except for the fact that you have the example of the Veronica Mars movie that's getting ready to come out. You had a TV show that was extremely popular. They made a ton of money off of it through advertising with the big network. Then they turn around and, of course, it goes away. And there was just a lot, like Firefly. There was a lot of people that just really, really wanted to see this. They really wanted to see it bad. Right. Now, that's not a very expensive show or movie to produce an hour and a half episode of. Like, it's not. And that's basically what it becomes is a large episode, an hour and a half long episode, just to like appease the audience. So the audience had to dig into their pockets.
But at the same token, though, keep in mind, when Veronica Mars ended and they discussed the possibility of it going to be a film, the studio said, well, the show was great. It did okay ratings. It was great for us for a couple seasons. But in the end, we don't think it's going to be viable for us to put a few million dollars behind the project. They knew the audience was behind it, and they knew the audience wanted to see it bad enough that they would actually go ahead and take it to the next level and fund the project. And I think that for some shows that might, you know, last 2 to 3 seasons, like Veronica Mars, that could happen. Like, for example, if the producers of Firefly came back and said, hey, would you like to see a Firefly movie? They would in turn back the project because they want to see it that badly.
That was Matt Damon going back over to Ben Affleck's house with him. Like, he went and picked him up, and now he's taking him back with him. It's cool. You know, they got kids and stuff, so.
Of course.
Now, there's a movie called Dinosaur 13 I've heard about.
That was one of the opening night films, and in fact, because it was in an opening night movie, and with the schedule, the way things fell in the first couple of days, I was not able to catch it. But those few people who did get to see it said that the film was actually quite amazing. Yes.
Is it about like kind of like that Walking with Dinosaurs kind of movie?
No, it was about a specially discovered dinosaur.
T-Rex. A T-Rex.
The most complete Tyrannosaurus Rex ever found, yes. The Black Hills Institute that unearthed that large Tyrannosaurus and what actually happened along the way with government involvement and of course, the scientists and everything else. That's what the whole film is all about, yes.
Interesting. I think its name is Lucy.
Could be.
I think they named it Lucy.
I thought that was the oldest Sue.
Sue.
Oh, they named it Sue. Okay.
Yeah, Lucy's the oldest person that they ever found. My goodness. This is why Bobby produces the show now, Tony. This is it right here, just to make mistakes like that. I love him, though. He's a big guy.
We all make mistakes. It happens, you know.
Tony Cabral, bit of busy. When is the next time you are going to be in the St. Louis area?
Well, in fact, I just got word that I look like I'm going to be speaking at the Media Communications Association meeting in early February, and I believe it's going to be on February 12th, and so I know I'll be in town for that to speak, discussing, you know, Sundance and, of course, my move to Chicago, which I'm not sure if you've embraced your audience with the fact that I have moved to Chicago officially.
I haven't embraced it, Tony.
So let me get this right. You're going to be in town on the specific day that we like to record the show.
Speaking at the MCA meeting, yes.
Yeah, well, you're going to do that on video, and then you're going to just come here. You're just going to, like the old classrooms that we used to be in when we were kids. You're just going to make the video. They'll put it on a videotape. They'll plug it in, you know. Everybody will sit underneath the computer, the TV screen, you know, and they'll just play your video, and you'll talk to the class. I get it. Like, I understand how this all works. It's no big deal. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Tony Cabral for coming on the show. Thank you so much for your 7th year in a row. Congratulations on your 15th year.
Thank you very much.
Sundance Film Festival, every single year, bringing us a little bit of Sundance to the cold polar vortex wintry area. Yes. I'm sick of the word polar vortex. Are they saying vortex a lot out there, Tony?
You know, we're not getting the polar vortex here. It actually hasn't snowed at all in Menlo Park City. And several places have been above freezing, so a lot of the snow has been melting.
I don't think I've ever asked you. You get out there, like I said, this is your 15th year in a row out there. Do you ever get to go skiing? Or sledding, or anything?
In fact, in 15 years, I've never once taken the slopes of Park City.
Okay, that's it. Before you come home, before you even leave on a jet.
Yeah, you're not allowed to leave.
You're not allowed to leave unless you go over and at least strap on some skis.
Go over to the Whisper.
Go over to Hidden Valley or Whisper Valley. Or
the Whisper where they had the Olympics.
Yeah, just go over there and just jump onto a sled and go down the bobsled track or something. Like, you got to at least experience the winter aspect of Park City.
I have a feeling it would be better if we get some snow before I leave, because it hasn't been that great for skiing right now because there has not been any snow.
All right, fair enough. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Cabral, thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Of course, Mark. Thanks, guys.
No problem. And that was Tony Cabral right there on the queue. He is a wonderful individual who comes on our show quite often, one of our favorite guests that we have every single year. And I really like it when Tony jumps on with us to talk Sundance and everything else in his life. I think that is awesome. And I want you guys to go back and listen to old episodes with Tony. You know where you can find those at?
You can find those at theqnow.com. Click on episodes at the top.
That's right. We're having a problem with our iTunes feed currently. I'm trying to get that worked out, ladies and gentlemen. It might be something I have to switch something up to get that back on the track. But unfortunately, the iTunes feed has not been working, so I do apologize about that. Anyway, we are at the top of the hour. It's time for CBS and Fox News on 1280 AM KYRO 1420 WINI. This is theqnow.com worldwide. Listen to it. Check it out during the break. We'll be back on the queue after this.
This guy is a lunatic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland joined today by producer Bobby. We just had Tony Cabral for his 7th year in a row on the queue join us from Sundance Film Festival. And we got Bobby over there jamming out to a little Beastie Boys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who doesn't love the Beastie Boys?
I got this. I'm sure everybody's heard of this program before, but I've got it's called Rapsody.
Yes.
Dude, for some reason, I don't know what was going on, but they were the top people to listen to a couple days ago. And I've been listening to nothing but Beastie Boys since then.
Just all Beastie Boys all the time.
Everything. Old school, new school.
I'm a big Paul's Boutique fan. That was a good album of theirs. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed that one. But other than that, I liked Beastie Boys. I grew up in 87. You know, I was a kid. I was 11 years old, of course, when License to Ill came out.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, that's their best album.
It's a great album, and mm-hmm. it's legendary. And of course, it influenced my life to an extent. But at the same point, you know, I've never really dove in hardcore on Beastie Boys. Nothing against them. Great, great band, great talented group. Nothing but good things to say about them. It's just never been my cup of tea.
I don't want to sound like a jerk, but, you know, since which one was it? MCA?
Yeah.
When he passed away, I mean, they've tried to put stuff together with people to replace him and stuff, and it's not It's not it. Just like TLC tried to replace, you know, Left Eye. No,
I think they could have pulled that off with Lil Mama, though. She did a good job in the movie. Like when they did the TLC story and she played Left Eye in there, it was obvious that the look was there. It was a really close representation. I don't know if they would necessarily replace or like try to create that whole Lisa Left Eye Lopez aspect of TLC again, but they could take Lil Mama and put her in her place and go out on tour as TLC, you know, featuring Lil Mama.
And well, they did the one performance at American Music Awards, I think it was.
Yeah, that was with Lil Mama, too.
With Lil Mama.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good.
Everybody says that, but I wasn't unimpressed. Like, it wasn't, like, blowing me away, but I wasn't just disappointed, like, don't ever do it again. Like, I wasn't in that.
It was cool for a one-time, a one-off.
All right. Hey, listen, so let me read this off to you, okay?
Okay.
Call of the Wild Men, Animal Planet's blockbuster chronicle of a wildlife trapper, is one hell of a romp. It's also a drama staging, zebra drugging, wallaby kidnapping, raccoon and bat killing, croc, oh, you know what. According to a disturbing new in-depth investigation by Mother Jones, the website.
No way.
That's right. The investigation led by producer James West was summed up by him in the video that says it exposed evidence of a culture that tolerated legally and ethically dubious activities, including using an animal that had been drugged with sedatives in violation of federal rules, directing trappers to procure wild animals, which were then caught again as a part of the script, and wrongly filling out legal documents detailing the crew's wildlife activities. Mother Jones' story begins with a reconstruction of a scripted scene in which the wild man star, simple redneck Ernie Brown Jr., also known as the Turtle Man, seeks out a nasty critter in a house that turns out to be a distressed pregnant raccoon. Except, according to the wildlife expert who took the raccoon family in after the segment, the mother raccoon was actually a male, and the newborns had all been grabbed days before the shot, left without neonatal treatment, so that by the time they were dumped at the animal hospital after shooting, the three emaciated orphaned raccoons needed intubation, fluid drips, antibiotics, and plasma transfusions.
Wow.
According to the rescuing veterinarian, who tearily curses Animal Planet and the Turtle Man, the fact that we saved two was a miracle. So yeah, man. And it gets worse from there. Virtually every scenario on the show is staged with animals that have been previously bought from farms or trappers and dropped in the situations from which Turtle Man extricates them. That includes a bunch of supposedly dangerous snakes that were found in a public pool and a family of bats that was dumped, possibly illegally, for rescuing from the attic of a hair salon. After the show left that location, it still needed two visits from the bat catchers. Several of the creatures ultimately died. Then there was the time someone pumped a zebra full of tranquilizers so that the Turtle Man could wrestle it neck first to the ground, you know, to rescue it.
Wow.
Yeah. We would basically pitch the entire script that was sent to Animal Planet weeks ahead of time with the exact animal and location, one insider tells West. They knew. Show producers even go as far as to make fake animal droppings using Nutella, Snickers bars, and rice. When confronted with all these allegations, Animal Planet brought in a top Manhattan crisis manager who has worked with celebrities like Justin Bieber to talk to West. Through the spin doctor, Animal Planet was said it would keep rerunning and selling the episodes in question. With 1.6 million viewers, it was, after all, their highest rated episode yet. So yeah,
I've heard this before though about Animal Planet, where they have shows that have, you know, the same situation that have been staged, you know, obviously the safari shows and stuff like that.
Well, it's, we know about reality. We get it, guys. We've had Dan Walsh here on the show. Dan Walsh sits here and he talks to us about Road Rules challenges and Real World and all those things that he was involved with MTV.
Right.
And he understands. And just like everyone else on this, there is a staged aspect to the reality shows that are put on the air. Like
right.
There are like whole situations where they recreate or they retape things over and over and over and over front of live audiences sometimes, you know, just to get it right so it looks great on national TV when they debut it.
Like the Teen Mom show, you know, there's no way that, you know, they just decide, you know, okay, Leah and Corey, you're going to sit, they just happen to walk in on Leah and Corey having this super, super heart-to-heart conversation about their marriage. No, it's Leah, Corey, look, this is what the people want to know. So you're going to sit down, you're going to have this conversation.
Right.
And it's going to go from there.
And I get it. Like, we understand it's entertainment for the sake of entertainment. I understand that. But then there's those shows like this Animal Planet, like the Bear Grylls show. It's well known that Les Stroud, the guy on Survivor Man,
right,
literally does take himself a backpack with like one camera or two cameras where he has to do stationary setups of the cameras. He literally goes and sleeps in the African wild or in the middle of the savannah or wherever, you know what I'm saying, for like a week on end, videotaping stuff, fire ants all crawling all over his body,
right,
having to start his fire. Like, that's real. But then there's Bear Grylls. It's been reported multiple times that Bear kind of sets certain things up.
Well, and he also, you know, when, and there's certain situations where, you know, he is supposed to be out in the wild and all this other stuff. But as soon as they wrap on filming for that day, he goes and sleeps in a nice, cozy hotel room. I've heard that quite a few times. You know, a TV show that both of you and I really like, I don't know if you like it, but the Total Divas show. They had a segment, during the first season where Natalia, who is the niece of Bret the Hitman Hart, and her husband, who is another wrestler, they get jealous at each other because of the fact that one's wrestling with this girl that's really good looking. The other one's wrestling with a guy who's really good looking. I mean, to me, I don't see that.
Right. Well, and then also, but see, with WWE, we all kind of know the pulled back curtain aspect of professional wrestling.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise us that they might have certain scripted aspects of even their reality show. You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Also, like, there's a show called South Beach Toe. This is the greatest show on earth. Let me tell you why. Because it is supposedly about a tow company down in Correct. Miami. But every character on the show is way over the top.
Way larger than life.
Way larger than life. And it's obviously a show. It's a reality show that's meta, is basically what it comes down to. A show within itself. It understands its own concept of like over the top reality.
Right.
So it makes fun of its own over the top reality sense.
Well, apparently the situations are real, but it's all recreated.
Well,
same
yeah.
Same thing with that lizard lick towing.
Well, yeah, those are all situations that are like recreated. They're not real situations because I think by law they can't do that. Because it falls under certain federal guidelines when it comes to the enforcement of certain things like that.
Oh,
interesting. But here's what's really funny is the South Beach Tow guys, like, they take that lizard lick thing to the next level. Like, they had a girl fall off a building. Like, a car backs into her,
uh-huh.
And she's like this, she's a black female, she's a really popular character on the show. She literally has a car backed into her at the top of this parking garage, and she falls like three stories backwards. And you can tell that it's like a fake mannequin type thing that goes flying into the air. Like, it is really horrible to her. And then all of a sudden, like, after another, the guy goes, he thinks that she's dead, so he over the top plays it off that these two people killed his partner. He goes chasing him down, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here she comes running around the building, and she punches through the window to grab and drag the people out of the car. And the other guy's like, "But you just died! I just saw you die!"
Well, on that lizard lick towing, they have an episode where the guys go and train to be security people. And who are they security for? The Nature Boy Ric Flair. And come on, these guys are on TV every week. You don't know who they are?
Right. Good point.
So,
fair enough.
It's all right. Pretty funny.
So we've also had a very exciting week in the viral world, have we not, sir?
We have.
We've had one Mr. Richard Sherman, right?
Yeah.
And he is a cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks that are going to the Super Bowl.
Correct.
And post game, after his game-winning defense,
yeah,
against Michael Crabtree of the San Francisco 49ers, he kind of cut a promo.
He cut
a promo. We're going to play it for you here, and then we're going to discuss this a little bit because I didn't realize something, and we're going to talk about it too. Did you know that the NFL is a nonprofit organization?
What?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Go ahead and play the Richard Sherman thing.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game.
So there's that right there, okay?
And then he also had a little bit more to say about Michael Crabtree, too.
Go ahead.
Giggity, giggity.
Oh, well, that was the best part.
Anyway, like, that's ridiculous. Okay, now, here's the funny thing. All week long, this video is getting replayed and talked about on the different sports shows and blah, 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 right? Okay. People are telling me, it's just unsportsmanlike. That's unsportsmanlike, Bobby. What do you think?
I don't find it unsportsmanlike. It's football.
Dejected she got when she. He's like,
oh,
he's
that
like,
was the best.
She's like, who's talking about you? Like
Michael Crabtree. All right, back to you, Joe. Poor girl. She's already had enough with the peephole guy. But
good point.
This is gonna be talked about when we do our game on game off because there's a new TV show which is about football. And this is the stuff that happens every day in football. They trash talk each other. They do all this crap. And actually, if we really wanted to make a point about it, it was not Richard Sherman. It was Michael Crabtree that was a bad person because Sherman, after the play, went up to try and shake, you know, Crabtree's hand and say, hey, you know, good job, you know, good effort for that, blah, blah, blah. And Crabtree pie-faced him.
Ah, well, you know, maybe that's why he got so animated after the effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he did the choking
now,
thing.
Now, at the same point, I'm going to defend the people who are against Richard Sherman for just a little bit, for 1 second. Yeah, he kind of is like trying to ride on it now. Like it wasn't just a moment in history that it just happened, you know. He's kind of like trying to get on all the shows and talk about it on purpose, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
and
he's
then saying more crazy stuff. Like he's not just kind of keeping to himself. Whereas if he would have just let it happen, kept to himself and moved on and started focusing on the Super Bowl and getting ready for that game, I think people would have had a little bit more respect for it.
Well, he's talking about how things are like it's a racist situation now that people are being racist with it.
Yeah, it was really mind-boggling. It was kind of sad that the way the world reacted. You know, I can't say the world. I don't want to generalize people like that because there are a lot of great people who didn't react that way. But for the people who did react that way and throw the racial slurs and things like that out there, it's really sad, especially that close to Martin Luther King Day. You're not judging a guy. I'm not out there beating on people or committing crimes or getting arrested or doing anything. I'm playing a football game at a high level and I got excited. But what I did was within the lines of a football field. What they did was an actual reality. They showed their true character. Those were real comments, not in a moment, not in a, you know, they had time to think about it. They were sitting at a computer and they expressed themselves in a true way. And I thought society had moved past that.
All right, there it is. Our Richard Sherman talking about the race card. I don't see the race card aspect of this. I didn't hear a bunch of people talking or throwing the N-word around or doing anything like that towards him. Now, I'm sure there are sports fans that are just general sports fans,
right,
that are just saying these kind of rude things around the pit fire with their Bud Light cans and they're just doing the thing, you know. I understand that, but I didn't catch any like hardcore racism towards him at all.
You know, I didn't really hear any hardcore racism either, but there's a lot of things I'm sure that have either been deleted from Twitter or things like that. Excuse me, that we didn't really get to see all of it.
The only thing that would have made it better is had that been Richie Incognito, you know, guarding
Cooper.
Yeah, like the guy that he like got pie faced by afterwards. He's like, I'm talking about Richie Incognito and all those N words he likes to say. He likes to kill people.
Man. Oh, that would have been awesome.
That would have been funny.
You were talking about the NFL is a not-for-profit, but one thing that's pretty interesting as well before we get to that is the NFL is actually, you know, every year they try to figure out ways to improve the game. And I have a little clip of Roger Goodell actually saying they are more than likely going to be taking away point afters.
All right, let's hear it.
Are there any plays in a game that really are not consequential? And one of the issues that has happened is that the extra point is almost automatic. I believe we had 5 missed extra points this year out of 1,200 some odd. So it's a very small fraction of the play. And you want to add excitement with every play. There's one proposal in particular that I've heard about. It's automatic that you get 7 points when you score a touchdown, but you could potentially go for an 8th point either by running or passing the ball. And then if you fail, you actually end up with 6. You lose a point.
All right.
fine.
And they, you know, the NFL is trying to do a whole lot to be able to change aspects of their game. So if you check out tonight, I think it airs at 5 p.m., the new version of the Pro Bowl. They did a draft on Tuesday and Wednesday with Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders. And I think this is one thing that is really cool for the game. I really like the way that they're doing this.
So they're letting two former players be the coaches, well, basically, actually, in draft.
Actually, what they're doing is the way that it worked is on Tuesday and Wednesday, they did like non-specialty guys on Tuesday, and on Wednesday they did like quarterbacks, running backs, stuff like that. Jerry Rice and Deion Sanders, they were captains of two teams. Now, they had a co-captain who was actually the number one and number two seed of NFL.com's Fantasy Football League.
Okay.
And then they also had two players that were actually playing in the game that were captains, and St. Louis Rams defensive end Robert Quinn got to be one of these guys.
Okay.
And those, that panel of five people then turned around and drafted teams. Huh. And it's really cool. They're trying to figure out ways just to improve the game. The one thing that I really think, because the Pro Bowl, this is a way to try and revive the Pro Bowl. One thing that I really think they should do, you know, they're trying to figure out ways.
Do you need to revive the Pro Bowl? Like, I think funny. I think it's funny that there is this belief or this idea that the Pro Bowl means nothing and then no one cares. Like, okay, if that's the case, then that happened over time. And that's just like, listen, you just have the Pro Bowl. And if people watch, they'll watch, and if they don't watch, they won't watch. And don't worry about whether you're getting great numbers or you're able to sell advertising on it and all that. Like, the whole point of the Pro Bowl is I'm one of the best in my position for the entire season,
but see that,
and I get to play in this game.
That's what they're talking about is, yes, that's what they're saying, but it's coming down to the players are coming to the game and they're basically, the best way to say it is they're half-assing it.
Oh, of course
they're
they
not
are.
Really playing. The winner gets the winning team, every player gets $56,000. The losing team, the players get $26,000. Now, what they need to do is kind of like baseball, where, you know, one team gets a home field advantage essentially for the Super Bowl. You pick an AFC and an NFC.
But you can't do that because your Super Bowl sites are always pretty much non-biased as it is.
Correct. But they're always in an AFC or an NFC team stadium. So what you do is you pick an AFC.
Right. But it's always based off of weather as well as like the locale and things. Okay. It's never because, oh, the AFC won this year, so we have to pick a locale that's AFC next year.
You predetermine you could predetermine Houston and Dallas. Okay. That's two. That's an AFC and an NFC. And whichever team wins, the AFC team or the NFC, whichever one is represented, that team, that city gets the Super Bowl. You do it a year in advance, so there can still be all the advertising and stuff like that. Obviously, you can't do it the week before.
Right, of course.
But, I mean, that's a way to improve the game. They're looking for ways to improve the game to make it exciting for people again, because people are not really caring anymore.
Well, let me talk about this for a second. The National Football League, as everyone knows, is a non-for-profit charity, the chief purpose of which is to promote the growth of the sport of football. Sure, it ranks in hundreds of millions of tax-exempt dollars annually and pays its executive tens of millions, but why not? Who can quibble with its sterling track record of football promotion, Bobby? Football is safer than it's ever been, and we've got Goodell to thank for that. He surely earned at least half of his salary just by thinking up new ways to penalize thuggish players for illegal hits to the head while allowing us to enjoy clean, healthy helmet-to-helmet smashes, which are still awesome. By the way, the nonprofit executive Roger Goodell, guess what his salary was in 2012?
Non-executive, we'll say.
Nonprofit executive.
No, nonprofit executive, we'll say $300,000.
$29.5 million salary is what Roger Goodell makes annually, bro.
No way.
Yeah. $29 million. Now, name a player in professional football that makes $29 million per year.
The only player that would be somewhat close to that would probably be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady.
There you go. Roger Goodell makes $29.5 million a year as of 2012. Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy. And here's what's even crazier about it. It's claiming nonprofit status for tax exempt. Like, the whole point in their argument is it's supposed to promote the growth of the sport of football. Yet we know that literally all it's about is high priced food, making sure the stadium's a huge, well successful stadium like Dallas and places like right. that, bringing in tons, and I mean tons of money annually per team. And like, it's all about sales. It's literally never been like, I'm sure it's kind of like John Cena. It's like claiming John Cena deserves tax exempt status because he does the Make-A-Wish Foundation stuff.
Right, right.
But like the Make-A-Wish Foundation stuff for John Cena is out of 100% of his career per year, it's literally 5% or less. It's the other 95 of the wrestling, the pay-per-views, the Monday Night Raws, the public appearances and things like that. That's what makes up the majority of his career. They're promoting professional football and the sport and the growth of the sport of football that's already super popular as it is. That's like maybe 2% of the overall year of professional football. The NFL is just 98% profit and making money.
Correct.
It's all about let's put Michael Crabtree and Sherman's faces and names all over cups at 7-Eleven and everything else. Like, let's be honest. Like, that's crazy. And there's other sports that are probably in that exact same position.
Absolutely. Major League Baseball?
Are they a nonprofit?
I'm sure they probably are. They probably have the same thing.
If the NFL, which is by far the most profitable of all the sports,
I know the NBA is considered a not-for-profit.
That's crazy, man. I'm sorry, that's just nuts. No, guys, you're a for-profit company. Pay your taxes. Like, you're making tons and tons of money, okay?
Do you know how much you make?
Now that makes me angry because they're not even paying taxes. So if they even came to you and said, hey, we gotta bump the price of the hot dog up from $8.50 to $10, and people go, why? Well, you got a new stadium, and of course, you know, we got taxes and things like that. And it's like, you don't pay taxes. You don't even pay them. How are you just passing the buck on to me if you don't pay the taxes you claim that you pay?
That's a good point. So how do teams get to be able to use the tax dollars to build stadiums?
Exactly, dude.
The NFL, I found out though the other day, an NFL coach, I think the highest paid NFL coach that is currently coaching right now is only, you're going to hate this too, is only about $6 million different than Roger Goodell.
Wow, that's crazy, dude.
$6 million difference.
All right, guys, it's time for us to take a quick break here on the queue. Don't forget, at the end of the show, you listen to this on the download only, and we have Overtime, a special little extra nugget of love for your audio ears to enjoy. So check that out at theqnow.com and download this episode. You get a little extra afterwards. We'll be back with Game On, Game Off, as well as this whole marijuana situation with Obama. It's kind of weird. We'll talk about that when we get back on the queue.
It makes my taco pop.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, Mark Bland bringing you back along with producer Bobby to Beastie Boy Songs All episode. Yeah.
The best part of this song is when you got the headphones on and you're rocking.
Oh, it bumps.
And you get that in your ear. Oh,
I don't ever have
it. To a whole nother
world.
Does
it do the Soul Republics like that? Does it bump the Soul Republics like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Them Soul Republics be a draying it up?
Dude, it's so... They don't dray it up. They do don't, it better.
They Soul they Republic do it, better. It up.
But that bass...
Didn't you say you were going to get us Soul Republic headphones?
Dude, I've been working on it.
You have not been working.
I have.
You've not.
I have.
You all talk.
Hey, real quick, I want to let people know, before we get into what we were talking about sure. next week's show, make sure you guys are tuning in next week. We have a really, really awesome show for you. We're going to be doing a show. The whole show is about addiction, and basically how it affects, you know, your family members, how it affects you, and then ways to be able to treat your addiction habit and be able to sober yourself up, essentially, and lead a normal life. You're going to have a lot of we're not going to name all of them, but we're going to have a lot of great guests on.
I am addicted to performing crappy radio. I'm really, really addicted and good at it. Like, I love putting out horrible radio shows every single week.
Every day.
And this is an intervention, is basically what's happening next week.
But we have a lot of really great guests, and just a lot of people, including myself. We're going to be telling our stories, and it's going to be awesome.
I'm better than all of them because I've never had any of those issues whatsoever. Who's awesome? Mark Bland is. No, I'm just joking, ladies and gentlemen. Definitely tune in to next week's episode because it is going to be a very stark contrast to what we normally do. It's going to be very entertaining. It's going to be fun. It's also probably going to have some emotional moments in it.
For sure.
And we are going to be hitting the idea of addiction head on very heavily. And we've got, like he said, some great guests lined up and some great people to tell their stories. And if you want to be involved in that situation, but you can't really get here, you don't want to like call in or you don't want to give anyone your name, you can go to Twitter, CC Papa, SISIPOPPA, or what's your email address where they can hit you up?
You can hit me up at theqproducerbobby@gmail.com.
There you go. Theqproducerbobby@gmail.com. Hit him up. Tell him your story. We'll keep your name completely out of it. You know, we will just tell your story, discuss it a little bit. You know, you don't have to even tell us your name in your email. You know,
correct.
We'll have your email address, but we, other than that, unless it's your name,
right,
we won't know what your name is. So you can be as anonymity as you want to be in regards to the situation. So, should be a very interesting episode. Barack Obama.
Yes.
I love the president of the United States.
Our commander in chief.
President Obama believes the legalization of marijuana in Washington and Colorado may open a Pandora's box and could lead to calls for cocaine, methamphetamine, and other drugs to be sold freely and openly. But more broadly, the president downplayed the dangers of pot, comparing it to cigarettes and arguing it is no more dangerous than booze.
Yeah.
As has been well documented, I smoked pot as a kid and I view it as a bad habit and a vice, not very different from the cigarettes that I smoked as a young person up through the big chunk of my adult life, Mr. Obama said in a lengthy interview with The New Yorker. I don't think it is more dangerous than alcohol. Mr. Obama also took aim at the uneven arrest statistics regarding marijuana, saying poor and minority kids face much stiffer penalties for smoking pot than the middle class children do. The president said it is important for the legalization of pot in Colorado and Washington to go forward because it is important for society not to have a situation in which a large portion of the people have at one time or another broken the law and only a select few get punished. Still, Mr. Obama said turning weed into a legal product raises serious questions that the U.S. must confront. I also think that when it comes to harder drugs, the harm done to the user is profound and the social costs are profound. And you do start getting into some difficult line drawing issues, Mr. Obama said. If marijuana is fully legalized, at some point folks say, well, we can come up with a negotiated dose of cocaine that we can show is not any more harmful than vodka. We are open to that. If somebody says, we've finally calibrated the dose of meth, it isn't going to kill you or rot your teeth, are we okay with that?
Now, so, two things about this that need to be pointed out. As well, in this same interview, Obama did turn around and say he has also talked to his daughters, Sasha and Malia, and let them know he is not comfortable with them doing this drug, but it would be their choice. The other thing is, just because the states of Washington and Colorado are legalizing this does not mean that it's still not, or that it is still...
You meant to say the football teams of Seattle and Denver, right?
The football. Well, it is funny. The football teams of Seattle and Denver are in the Super Bowl, and those are the two teams that are two states that just legalized marijuana.
Fair enough.
But it is still a federal offense to carry marijuana.
Yes.
Just because your states of Colorado and Washington have passed it still means it is a federal offense. So the DEA can come in, and you could face federal prosecution. So don't think that you are going to be, you know,
getting away with
everything. Getting away with everything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So Barack Obama feels that pot is just as safe as alcohol, if not more safe in certain ways.
They actually have proof that marijuana is non-addictive.
Probably
the addictiveness is the feeling.
Yeah, but I think that's still addictiveness. Like, there's an addictive quality to it. We'll talk about that on our addiction show next week.
Absolutely.
We'll ask certain guests that we have coming on. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for Game On, Game Off.
Game On.
Game On, Game Off. If you do not know what Game On, Game Off is, it's a very simple situation. It's kind of a play on the Get Up On This by Jensen Karp and Matt Robinson, the popular podcast where we had Jensen on last year. And basically, we kind of hip you to something really kind of cool that you need to know about. We also tell you about something that we think you need to stop doing. And we do it one time around. No big deal, you know, and I get a lot of people that hit us up and go, man, that was really cool what you talked about. Like, I didn't even know that that existed, or you know what I'm saying? Right. When we had Jordan Grace in here, her get up off twerking was very popular. Very popular get off or game off. Not get off. Game off. Don't get off on game offs. Something like that. Anyway, it's time for a game on, game off. And who do you want to go first this week, Bobby?
I'll go first.
You're going to go first. So, Bobby, tell me, what is your game on?
My game on is a TV show called Friday Night Tykes.
Friday Night Tykes.
It is intriguing. I cannot stop watching
it. Is this the Beverly Hills guys that have like the young kids?
No. All right, Friday Night Tykes is a play on Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
The TV show about football.
All right.
And the movie about football. What it is it's based in San Antonio, Texas. There's a youth Texas football league, and just seeing these coaches interacting with these kids, it's astonishing that parents allow this. Like
the way they talk to them?
Oh, yeah.
I've never watched it.
Oh, it's amazing. The one coach actually,
I got a friend of mine named Taj. He works very closely with a very famous artist from the St. Louis area.
Uh-huh.
And he is big into the JFL, Junior Football League, and all that. Like, he is one of the coaches. He has been on like two or three different championship teams that have like gone on to like national stuff.
Oh, I guarantee this is nothing compared to that. These people are...
Which, by the way, in the rap game, there are two extremely well-known individuals who are heavily involved. Snoop is heavily involved into the Youth Football League program over in California.
Yeah.
And so is Uncle Luke from the 2 Live crew.
Oh, really?
He's actually a high school coach now. He actually took it from being just a youth league guy to a high school coaching position.
Wow.
Yeah.
But in one of the episodes, now it's only three episodes deep, and I just caught the first
episode.
What
station is this on?
It's on the Esquire station, but you can pick it up on...
Esquire?
Yeah, you can pick it up on Fox. On like Fox's streaming and stuff like that, and on their website. Fox owns Esquire.
I didn't even know there was an Esquire station.
I didn't know either till I saw a commercial for it. But the one episode I'm watching, and the coach looks at the kid and goes, "I don't give a damn what you have to do. I want his head in the ground. And if it means you ripping your own head off, I don't care." And I'm just...
And how old are these kids?
8 and 9.
8 and 9.
Yeah.
Dude, the stories that I've heard from parents in soccer leagues, CYC leagues, of like just things like, there was this one coach whose team had been pretty much getting handled. Like a friend of mine, she has a daughter who was playing on a 7-year-old soccer team.
Uh-huh.
And there's one team in their league had been getting pretty much manhandled the entire year. Just didn't have a really good team. And that happens. You know, there's teams that just aren't that great. Well, evidently they were just completely like zero wins. Like just horrible, horrible. And it was the last game of the season. And their team had already played them once before. And the last time they played them, they beat them like 3-1 or 4-1 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, this was the last game of the season. And evidently the coach had approached the other coach and said, "Hey, listen, can you kind of take it easy on the girls? I was hoping to at least, you know, you're going to the championship anyway, because your team only has like 2 losses on the whole season. Do you think you could take it easy on the girls and, you know, try to make it to where it's at least a tie or a fair game? Like, you know, just because we know that you guys are good enough to like just destroy these girls."
Right.
And they're 7-year-olds. So anyway, the coach is like, "Well, I'll play the team." I guess a couple of goals were scored, and before you knew it, the score was 4-0. Okay, and there was a couple of opportunities that this bad team was given or that had, but it just flummoxed or whatever and went out the window. So anyway, after the game, the girls are crying. Okay, 7-year-old girls.
Right,
their hearts are broken. They haven't won a game that whole season. Their whole season's over. They just got beat again in front of a bunch of parents and a bunch of other kids. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So they line up. They line up, and the coach from the other team, he decides to go down. You know how like they all do, because everybody lines up, including the coaches at the end. As the little girls are coming by, just to give them the high five, he's just like pow, 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 like as hard as he can, smacking their hands as hard as he possibly can. Actually, like, bruise this one girl's hand and stuff like that. And I'm, like, sitting there going, it's not that serious, guys. It's just not that serious. And I'm sure that you're seeing this on this show.
Yeah, in this Friday Night Tikes, I mean, they're crazy. There's one team that's undefeated for the last, like, 3 years. Never lost a game. And the coach, the one kid, his grandma or something lives in another state, so he goes for a week every year to go see his grandma. Well, this year it happened to just be the first week of practices. Well, the coach makes him run so much that he physically becomes ill and has to be going. Potentially, you don't see if he does or not, may have to go to the hospital because he's puked so much that he potentially could be dehydrated. And he comes over at one point and he goes, "All right, coach, I've done everything you asked. You know, can I start practicing?" And the coach goes, "Do you think you're ready?" The kid goes, "Yeah." The coach goes, "No, you're not. Go start running that way." And just keeps making the kid run.
That's ridiculous.
And they're super stringent. Like, one team actually had a 2-year suspension, wasn't allowed to go to a championship or anything because they were illegally recruiting kids that were too old.
Recruiting.
The one parent said at 3 years old, somebody walked up to him for the team that his kid is playing for now and hands him a full front and back colored business card and said,
to a three-year-old
and said, "When you're ready to play, give us a call."
That's weird, man. That's so crazy. Yeah. Game on Friday Night Tikes.
Game off.
Okay. The other side of this.
Game off is another TV show based on football. Hard Knocks.
Okay.
The show was really cool.
I can see it.
The show was really cool the first year.
Yeah, it's probably a unique idea to be done one time, and now they're just burying it with, like, horrible crappiness.
And the St. Louis Rams are a team that are potentially going to be forced. None of the teams want to do this show anymore. The St. Louis Rams are a team that are potentially going to be forced to be on Friday Night or on Hard Knocks this year.
Now, is Hard Knocks an NFL produced program?
It is produced by the NFL in conjunction with HBO Sports.
Wow. And they're going to be forced.
Yeah, there's teams, the St. Louis Rams.
Why do you want people to get game off it? It's just worn out its welcome?
It's worn out its welcome. It's just not as entertaining as it was the first year. Like, the first year, it was based upon the rookies that were experiencing the hard knocks of getting into the NFL.
Right.
And now it's just seeing all these millionaires basically be
crybabies
whine because they have to come to practice.
Wow. That's crazy. I really have never watched Hard Knocks whatsoever.
I watched the first year with the Cowboys, and then I watched the second year with the Jets, and then I was pretty much done with it after that when they did the Dolphins.
A really interesting one with the Bengals where they fired Ojo Cinco.
Yeah.
Give him his walking papers.
No. That was with the Dolphins.
Oh, was that with the Dolphins?
That was with the Dolphins right after him and the girl. He headbutted the girl.
Oh, yeah. That was crazy.
Philbin brought him in and was like, "Hey," Philbin is a assistant coach that used to be from the Packers, who's now the head coach of the Dolphins. But he brings him in and he's like, "You know, Chad, we're just not going to be able to keep you, you know. We can't."
"My name is Ocho Cinco.
We can't have violence like that."
"My name is Ocho Cinco. That's my name. You don't want Ocho Cinco on your team?"
No.
Ocho Cinco's the man."
"No, we're not going to be able to."
No. It's Ocho Cinco, 85. I changed my name from a real human being to the number 85 in Spanish. You don't want that? It's Miami. It's Miami. There's lots and lots of fine Spanish-speaking people down here. Ocho Cinco's one of them."
"Yeah, but we're trying to have a clean rap."
"She deserved it." "She deserved it. How many times you going to headbutt a chick? You know what I'm saying? All the time. That's what Ocho Cinco does.
Day in, day out."
"Hey, if I was Ocho Nuevo, that'd be totally different. I don't even know what that means."
"If I was Ocho Ocho.
Be odd. All right, so game off.
Ocho Uno.
All right, my turn. Game on. My game on is going to be a documentary coming out. I haven't even seen it. But I'm game-onning you to the trailer for this because I think this is going to be one of those movies that everybody's going to watch. Eventually, they're going to emulate in every freaking city. It's going to be, it's not going to be a good thing. But the documentary that is going to create this buzz looks amazing. Okay. And it's called The 12 O'Clock Boys. And it's a trailer that was just released this past week.
Okay.
It's about there is a contingent of inner city youth and young adults in Baltimore, Maryland, that like to drive dirt bikes up and down the streets. All kinds of dirt bikes, ATVs, dirt bikes, they're kicking in cops' windows on camera. Oh. They're doing all kinds of bad things. It's basically motorized gangs. It's the beginnings of what would become Mad Max. That's what it's starting to become. And they have no respect for the law whatsoever. And you can tell. And they're indoctrinating these kids down to the ages of 6 to ride ATVs and these dirt bikes. And literally, it's basically what they're just running around the city with dirt bikes, creating public nuisance, creating problems. Kind of like the argument against the Ride of the Century people.
Yeah.
But this is just like, blatantly, every time they get arrested, they just don't care. It is just like banging in Little Rock. And I guarantee you that once this comes out, you're going to have a contingent of people throughout different cities in the United States, especially inner city youth, that are going to pick this up. And they're going to be like, we want to do that here. We're going to start our own clique. We're going to start our own thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they're going to give motorcycle people a really bad name, but you're not going to be able to stop it. But it looks amazing. This documentary
just sounds awesome.
Blew my mind. So you might want to check that out.
And what's it called again?
12 O'Clock Boys.
Is there a reason they call them the 12 O'Clock Boys?
I think they explain it, but it's because when they decide to do wheelies and stuff, they go all the way backwards to where it's like 12 o'clock on the hands on a dial. Okay. So, yeah, check that out.
Sounds awesome.
It's going to be an interesting movie. Also, I will do this just as a side note. I talked about Billy Corbin, my friend, who did all those documentaries, like The U and all that. He's got a movie called Dogfight coming out, and it's kind of like the underground background of a guy named Dada 5000 and Akimbo Slice, and like the burgeoning history and background of the underground fight scenes that came out of Miami that went viral back in like 2007.
So it's nothing about dogfighting like Michael Vick dogfighting.
No. This is about like underground street fighting, like where Kimbo Slice came from.
Okay.
That's literally it. So that's going to be coming out soon. There's already a trailer for it too. But that trailer's been out for a good year, almost a year and a half at this point.
Okay.
It's just been a while since they've been able to get that. My game off is going to be attempting to regulate the internet. Okay. Stop it, federal government. Stop it, every single person out there, all you ISPs and everything. Net neutrality is something that we need. If you kill off, do you know what net neutrality is? Net neutrality basically is the ability for the internet to remain unregulated.
Right.
ISPs can't stop you or cap your speeds. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, even though the cell phone companies can do that, but like, they can't like stop you from using certain sites and stuff like that. That's what net neutrality is. They've been trying this through CISPA and SOPA and everything else over the last like 7 or 8 years. And it fails horribly because nobody wants their internet regulated. They just don't. All you hear is horror stories out of countries like China and Korea and everywhere else where they regulate the internet heavily.
Well, there was a big story this past week. It was something about like 500 million or 50 million Chinese IP addresses somehow were routed back to this house in Northern California.
I did not hear anything about that.
Yeah, I got to find more about the story. It was just a quick little blip I saw on Twitter. But apparently, like, somehow, like 50 million IP addresses have been rerouted to this house in Northern California. And, you know, we were talking about the addiction thing. China has a internet addiction boot camp.
Wow.
If you have an addiction to the internet in China, you go to a 6-week boot camp where they
force you to like go reprocess, walk around flowers.
they like reprocess your brain to not want to be on the internet.
Interesting. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's my game off. Game off. Stop everybody trying to even discuss the idea of regulating the internet. It's just like the whole idea with trying to stop people from illegally downloading. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get everybody on board, and you're not going to be able to stop illegal download. You're not going to be able to stop the internet is too big. It's going too far, and it's going to be the Wild West for a long time. Just leave it alone.
My provider actually will send an email if I go to a site that is normally known for downloading illegally movies or music. They'll send an email that says, hey, if you do this again, we have the right to kick you off of our provider.
Really?
From being your provider.
And what is your company?
Charter.
Yeah, I don't deal with Charter. We're not dealing with Charter no more. I understand what these companies are trying to do. I get it that they're trying to benefit themselves. They're trying to play by the rules. Right. You know, they're trying to work with these other individuals because these guys are power players too.
Correct.
But at a certain point, guys, the internet is kind of for everybody and it's kind of where it is. And there's going to be no opportunities whatsoever to be set upon you anytime soon where you're going to be able to regulate anything. People aren't going to let it happen. I'm sorry. They're not going to be able to take your guns away or take them out of your house, and they're not going to be able to regulate the internet. Just stop. It ain't happening in the United States of America. So just game off that. All right. We got overtime coming up after this show. Just listen to the ending song. And once the ending song is done playing, you can start listening to the overtime. First off, it's time for us to get out of here. I want to thank Tony Cabral for coming onto the show again.
Again.
After all these years of going to the Sundance Film Festival, I appreciate him doing that. 15 years, congratulations to him. Also, I want to thank producer Bobby, as well as 1280 AM KYRO, 1420 WINI for syndicating the show every single week. Don't forget to check us out at RadioFooBar.com and TapDetroit.com, respectively. The schedules on their sites, click those and find out when the queue is playing there. And also, please don't forget to go check out theqnow.com. Old episodes, new episodes, as well as interesting stuff that goes on the Boiling Point blog, the Breaking Point blog. I always say Boiling Point, it's Breaking Point. But and all that great stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be doing overtime right after this. But on behalf of producer Bobby over there.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. We'll see you guys next time on The Q.
Way back in history with that
rap.
And me.
Mark B. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Overtime. Producer Bobby Mark Bland. Fucking doing it. That's what we do.
Oh, I love the Beastie Boys.
He's a B. Well, ladies and gentlemen,
Bobby.
Great episode of the show coming up next week, Addiction. Make sure you check that episode out once it gets online. If not, listen to us every single Sunday morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 1280 AM KYRO, WestplexNewsTalk.com. But it's always easier to just get the show once it loads up to the system because, boom, it's there.
It's all right there at your fingertips.
It's all right there at your fingertips. All right, well, it's overtime, and I've got a question, a few questions.
Sure.
That I want to go through, as well as a letter from a listener.
Okay.
So let's do the letter from a listener first.
Okay.
Mark, I've been in a long relationship and married for a while. Before marriage, my boyfriend cheated on me and I forgave him. After marriage, he cheated again with someone we both know.
Ooh.
He asked to forgive him, and I decided to give him another chance.
Wow.
The problem now is that I still don't trust him. I'm afraid if it happens again, I feel like I'm losing my time with someone that is going to hurt me. Probably I don't deserve his trust either because I check his personal things sometimes. I feel like we are in a sick relationship. In the last months, we started to talk about kids and building a business together. I want both things, kids and being independent. But the thought of investing everything with someone I don't trust completely is a big internal conflict. What can I do in this important moment of my life where things are changing? Should I risk to live with him or get out of the boat ASAP? Well, let's be honest here. He cheated before you were married. That wasn't enough to stop him from cheating after you were married. And now you're in this dementedly sick relationship where you have to search through his personal items and spy on him because he cheats. And there's a chance because he's done it twice before, he's going to do it again. I understand. I get it. So to me, yeah, you need to get out of that relationship. You need to call that a day.
Yeah, you're not living, you know, what a relationship is supposed to be about.
Do not get kids involved in this. Do not.
Absolutely not.
Do not go down that road at all and get pregnant by this individual, period. I'm sorry. It's no disrespect to this man. I don't know this man. I don't know you personally. But here's the thing. If you already are questioning all these things over here, you add kids to the mix and it's going to get way more messy and it's going to get way more emotional than anything you're dealing with right now.
And you're talking about you check his stuff all the time. Obviously, there's got to be something still going on or potentially, you know, he is cheating still. Like there's no way there. I mean, there's a lot going on there. No way should kids be involved. And you talk about having a business, you know, this is almost like a business relationship. You know, being in a marriage is almost kind of like signing an agreement for a business relationship, because you understand that you both are going to work together. You're both going to put all of your effort into this relationship, and it will either succeed, succeed or fail.
I work in media and entertainment at some of the highest levels. Okay. I have a beautiful wife and I love her to death, but I am approached and I see gorgeous women that if I wasn't married and I didn't have a wife and children, I would totally try to hit on them. I think that they're gorgeous women and some of them have amazing personalities, and they would totally be right up my alley of somebody that I would want to be with in some form or fashion. I never play on a single one of those ideas. I never do. I just never go down that road because it's not going to lead to anything good. And I'm very happy where I'm at. And I owe that to my children. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't understand all those little aspects of mommy and daddy's relationship. Right. All they care about is mommy and daddy are together and they love me. That's all they care about.
And I'm just fucking good looking. I get people talking to me all the time.
You're a fucking sexy beast is what you are. So I would get out of that relationship. I would jump bail, boat, right, whatever right now. Get out of it and just be. Listen, if you're going to stay with the relationship, do not have kids. And I would start a business. Other than that, I would jump out of the boat, go find yourself a much happier situation where you don't feel like you can't trust the other individual, and you can still have those kids with to trust the person that you're going to have kids with. Right. If you don't trust the person you're having kids with, then that's a bad, bad thing. That's just really putting the kids in. All right, we got some questions.
Okay.
And you know I love questions.
I do too.
I love the questions. In fact, I think I love the questions sometimes more than the advice, just because it makes me think a little bit more. Okay, first question. Why is it so hard to make friends as an adult?
For me, I think the answer to that would be you're very set in your ways. When you're like in your teenage years, stuff like that.
You're still learning.
You're still learning, and your friends are learning. And so you both kind of form a bond in your learning. At 25, 26, 30 years old, you're kind of set in your ways on how
you're also busy. Like, as you become an adult, you literally find ways to occupy your dead time because you have your friends that you already have.
Correct.
And then beyond those friends that you already have, like, you find ways to fill that time period between hanging out with your friends or your wife or whoever. You know what I'm saying?
I guess I'm a bum. I always try and make new friends.
No, I always try to make new friends too, but that's because of the nature of the business that we're in and who we are as people. You know, we're always trying to make friends because we just are outgoing, talkative individuals. There's a lot of people that are not like that. Like, my last great friend that I made was Matt. Like, that was 7 years ago. Like, he was the last guy that became like, that's not true. Justin's the last great friend, but that was still 3 or 4 years ago when me and Justin met. So that's my point. Like, it comes in waves. You'll have a person drop into your life. You'll become really good friends with them and boom.
Yeah.
But I think that I don't think it's any more difficult as an adult. Actually, I think as an adult, you find a very quicker medium between two people to like play on. I think people are more open as they get older to conversing. When you're a kid, it's kind of hard to find the things you want to talk about with somebody else.
Well, also too, I think a good way to note, whether or not someone is a good friend to keep for lasting is you don't have to talk to them every day.
Yeah,
absolutely every day. I mean, I consider him literally a brother. He was in my wedding.
Koba.
Koba, but also a friend that you know too, Jesse Barbin. You know, I met him.
He refuses to come on the show. He doesn't like us.
I met him 4 years ago.
He hates us.
He and I don't have to talk every day. We talk maybe.
He doesn't talk to you because he doesn't like you.
I talk maybe once every week and a half.
Yeah, and that's pushing it for him because he really doesn't want to like you at all, Bobby. I get it. It's horrible. I love
Jesse. I love you, Jesse.
All right. What is the worst crime you've gotten away with? I did something with, you're going to get it, Radio Shack many, many years
ago. What did you do?
I did something with Radio Shack many, many years ago that I was not proud of whatsoever. I kind of cashed something brand new out as it was an extremely expensive item. Cashed it out to an extremely low price
and like then sold it to myself. Like a trash 80 for...
Sold it to myself. Yeah, some $2,000 computer and sold it to myself for like $50 type thing. And I would say, worst crime that I've ever gotten away with. Dude, I don't know, man. That might be up there, though.
I did... I didn't take anything, but I did a B&E. Breaking and entering.
Bacon and eggs or a bowel movement and energy drink.
No, I did a breaking and entering. It wasn't into someone's home. It was into an abandoned building.
You're so dirty, man.
But That's probably the worst thing I've ever done.
All right. What is one thing you will absolutely never understand the appeal of? Oh, man, that's a really good question.
Two things. Purses. Purses. I just don't understand it. Like, a dude can walk around with this piece of leather.
Yeah.
And it has everything that we need. But a female has to have a fucking 35-pound bag. Don't understand it. And then the other thing would be the whole pants tucked into the boots as a fashion statement.
Like cowboys doing that stuff?
No. Like women.
Oh, like, these are like, women things. Like, I was thinking like there's cowboys that walk around their like boots
you got the,
tucked in?
You got the boots with the fur, and then you got the pants tucked into the boots with the fur.
I don't know if there's anything that I will never understand fully the appeal of. There are things that I'm just not a fan of. Uh-huh. Like the Doctor Who thing. Like, you like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I don't understand the appeal of it, but then again, it's sci-fi. Like,
correct.
Everyone's sci-fi bug is a little different. So, you know, obviously hitting on certain, it's pushing certain buttons in certain people to make them want to care.
Right.
You know, beyond that, I really don't know if there's anything that I understand. Maybe the WWE's need to continue to keep pushing the Divas division as an option.
Well,
is there an appeal for? I don't even know.
I don't think there's an appeal anymore. Like when it was
the women. If you notice, our things are very male towards women oriented. I think that's odd.
But I think women would have the same thing to us. I think women would say, you know, why do you have only a billfold?
Why do you always got to go get yourself 12 boneless wings every football day? Like, I don't understand that.
But with the Diva situation, I think there was an appeal for it originally with like Trish, Sable, Lita, with those guys. But now I don't think there is. I think it's just, hey, here's some good looking women. We're going to try and make it sound, you know,
yeah,
like they're wrestlers.
What is a random fact about yourself? A random fact. Just a random fact about yourself.
I have a phobia of darkness.
I have thanatophobia, actually. That is a very random one for me. Do you know what thanatophobia is?
No.
You would think that everyone has what thanatophobia is, but no, I literally think about it.
It's a phobia of clowns?
It is a phobia of death. Oh. I literally will wake up in the middle of the night and have like episodic moments of heavy breathing and cold sweats. Wow. And just really like hardcore.
I had a thing where I was kind of freaked out by death, but then I just kind of was like, it's going to happen eventually, but I am terrified of the dark.
Terrified.
I will have an anxiety attack.
Like, is that why that when we did the Halloween show?
Yeah.
You were so, like, really? Does it bother you that much?
Yeah.
Yeah, you stay in your car a lot.
Because I don't, I don't know how to explain it.
Like, so you would have hated going to the Six Flags to their haunted house called Pitch Black.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it was interesting.
I had a shit all over myself.
Wow. When someone comes over to your house, what do you put away so that they don't see it? Like, what's the one thing in your house? For me, we have our kitchen table is constantly got just bills and everything else just piled up on it. And I always just like arm drag it, like a huge arm full of stuff and just take it into our bedroom and put it on the bed to get it out of the way.
My biggest thing would probably be
your bowl for weed.
All that pot I smoke.
All that pot you smoke.
I don't know. I don't really think I have anything. I'm at a point where I'm kind of proud of everything that I have. So I try not to hide it to an extent that my wife gets pissed. Because
everybody's big on your Mark Hamill lightsaber collection series.
Fuck you, dude. Those lightsabers are awesome.
What's the dumbest way you've hurt yourself? This is the last question. Dumbest way that you've ever hurt yourself.
All right, so I was 11 years old.
Okay.
We were at a bowling alley.
Right.
And I had a friend who was, he was kind of an acquaintance. I had a friend who was my age. His brother was 18, but he was kind of an older figure to us, so we would, kind of emulate some of the things he would do. Well, the older brother went over to, you know, fuck with the mom and pinched her on the leg while she was trying to bowl. Well, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do the same thing to my mom. So as I go up to pinch my mom, 16 pounds of bowling ball right in my face.
Smacked you in the face.
Right in the face. I had a concussion, but nothing broke. But my nose is shaped a little irregular now Due to it.
Wow. I used to get up on my roof when I was a kid, and I loved hanging out up there looking at
Mick Foley.
Well, I used to like to get up there and look at the stars and stuff like that, especially in summertime. I mean, when you're 10 years old, 11 years old, whatever, you find a way to climb up on the roof without needing a ladder or anything. You can get away with it. Well, as I got a little bit older, I started to kind of feel myself, you know, athletically and stuff. And I figured, you know, 8 feet's not a big drop. It's about an 8 to 10 foot drop.
Right.
So I would jump off the roof, hit the ground and roll like MacGyver or something like that. You know, I'd roll like it's a stuntman. And it always worked out great. It always worked because our front yard was zoysia grass. So it always worked out perfectly because it was soft grass and everything like that. Well, evidently this one time it didn't work out. I came down and when I landed stiff legged on one leg and it kind of bowed out and it just went the wrong direction.
Oh.
And I literally couldn't walk for like a week and a half. Like I was stumbling and like vividly, but I didn't sprain anything. I didn't break anything. I guess it was just strained so painfully or whatever, or bruised it in some form or fashion. Wow. And I had to limp and it was the dumbest thing I ever did. It's the dumbest way I ever got hurt in my entire life.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yep. That's how we do it around here. That's good. Is that good for you, buddy?
It is. That was a good one.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on Overtime. We want to thank every single one of you guys for listening to the show every single week. Tell a friend. Remember, tell somebody about the Q.
Absolutely.
Let them know. Tell them about how awesome it is that we talk about the things. Hip them up to some of our unique ideas. Tell them about Game On, Game Off, which is by far starting to become one of our more popular segments.
Absolutely. And if you have someone that you know that is affected by addiction and you would like to either help them or possibly share their story, get a hold of us at theqproducerbobby@gmail.com on Twitter.
Or you can go to theqnow.com, the contact page.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you can find us on Twitter at CCPapa.
At Mark Bland, MarkBland.
Tell us your story. It's going to be an awesome show next week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next time on The Q.